Day.com/EN.
This is for a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, "I have been sent to complete noble manners."
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله, dear listeners, sisters and brothers. This is Arab English Radio. Once more, I have the honor to be here with you. You're listening to Asma. And in here, we talk basically some literary stuffs related to Ashura and the Battle of Karbala. We are talking about plenty much of artistic aspects that are involved with the topics that are related to Ashura and the battlefield of Karbala. There we talked about different forms of literary pieces that belong to the vast literature of Ashura, about the themes that reflect the goals of Ashura and shed light on the main characteristics of Imam Hussein alayhi salam and his honorable, respectful companions. We even mentioned the kind of a play specialized for Ashura called Ta'ziyah. Then we talked about those specialized narrations that is a ritual in Persian Islamic heritage. We said that the main aim behind these plays and these narrations is to give a visual account of Ashura and give us the slightest feeling of sympathy and condolence. They take us through an unimaginable passion and emotion that already exists in our heart regarding our beloved Imam and his companions. Now, in today's episode, I would like to talk about a very important aspect of literature of Ashura, which is about its dynamic soul, its liveliness. That is, it never seems to be repetitive. We hear all those poems and the exact account of Battle of Karbala year after year, but it never feels as something monotonous or boring. It is like an active volcano that burns every year with the same power and vigor. Now, it's very important to take it into consideration that it is not something done by human beings. We know that this is a spiritual promise. This is the promise that God has made to his martyrs. Their name will never be forgotten and their memory will never fade away. So their name shall live forever, just like a tree that gives new branches to itself. About the story of Karbala is a little bit of different because the story that happened in there, the horrendous situation that happened to our beloved Imam and his companion, is a sort of a thing that God himself is going to retribute for that. So he himself has made a promise that he is going to be the one who takes revenge for this. So the first thing that happens is that the name of Imam Hussein alayhi salam would never cease to exist. And every year it's going to be stronger. The passions are going to be deeper. And the amount of people that are going to know him, that are going to be attracted to him, is going to increase year by year. As you can see in different platforms, that there are plenty much of people who are from different religions, yet when they hear his name, their eyes will be filled with those circles of watery teardrops, and then they start crying without even knowing why, because they do not know anything about him. Just hearing the story that happened to him and his family makes our heart, any heart that has got a purity in itself or that's got some sort of insight inside of it, would get to feel the sorrow and sympathy to share with Imam Hussein alayhi salam and his companion.
Hope you have instilled in our heart, in a world where hopes disappear. Peace you have ingrained in our soul, in a time when peace becomes rare. Every breath that you did take, every step that you would make, purpose and guidance it gave mankind's heart it reawaked.
So as I just told you, every year we go through the very same accounts, the very same poems, yet they are dynamic. They have the same, or let's just say, more powerful passions to share. Still, when you hear to them, you feel like you are hearing them for the first time. They seem to be very much touching, moving, and giving so much of lessons year by year. It is true that you have listened to us as Muslim people, have been involved with these stories ever since we have been children. So it is not a very strange thing for us to just feel like it's something that every year happens to us. So we should cease to be engaged in all of those things normally. But what happens in here is that the story of Ashura is different. There's no way for us to feel like bored or exhausted. There's no way for us to feel that, okay, this is something repetitive and I no longer feel like I'm engaged. No, it's no way like this. It is actually the reverse. Every year, you just take part in these ceremonies. You listen to these poems as if you are getting to know them for the first time. And every year, it is very, very strange case, you know? Every year, you start to get familiar with the different aspects of this tragic epic that happened in the Islamic history. Just as I told you, there are some factors behind this very truth. One of them is the act of God, the will of God. God himself wishes for the name of Imam Hussein alayhi salam to flourish everywhere and for his memory to never be forgotten or going just far away from the reach of his loved ones.
Please send any suggestion, any idea to our email, that is englishradio@irib.ir.
The other factor is actually the help of these literary pieces. You know, every year there are different sessions in which poets and writers start to share their books, their new books, their new editions, their new poems, compositions, in order to make sure that the New Year's ceremony is going to be filled with some new materials. But even if there is no new material, the story of Karbala will never cease to exist, because that is the will of God. He wants it to flourish. He wants it to bloom. And he wants the ideas behind the battlefield of Karbala to spread everywhere, to get into the heart of every pure soul that is living everywhere in this world. That was the whole thing that I just wanted to shed light upon. The liveliness and the dynamic aspect of the literature of Ashura is something that is very interesting, and also it attracts attention, really. It is something that is very strange and very interesting, and it is the will of God. So this is all the time that we had for today's episode. Thank you for staying with us.
Every grain of sand in every desert land, he knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand, he knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash, he knows. Every thought I have and every word I share, he knows. Allah knows.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Said Pureza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Said Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Iran's Kishair line is back to Afghanistan. Afghan and Iranian officials have welcomed this in a ceremony at Kabul's International Airport and stressed the importance of closer economic cooperation between the two countries.
We're happy today and welcome our Kishair line. We have very good relations with the Islamic Republic of Iran and do our best to expand cooperation in the political, economic and social fields.
This airway can be very helpful in the economic and cultural fields. I think such flights will soon be welcomed by other airlines as well, and that makes transportation between the two countries easier.
Iran has always tried to help boost Afghanistan's economy, and the resumption of Kishair flights to Afghanistan can be considered another positive step in that regard.
Considering the changes that have taken place in Afghanistan since last year, the number of people coming from Afghanistan to Iran has risen, and that demand should be met. This is not enough, and we need to do more, and such activities are very effective in boosting economic relations between the two countries.
In recent months, Afghanistan has been deprived of many sources of international aid and even its own financial assets held in the United States. Now, Afghanistan's cooperation with Iran appears to be vital to the country's economic growth.
Such economic activities in cooperation with other neighboring countries promise the improvement of Afghanistan's economy by providing job and investment opportunities for people and for businessmen. Abdullah Amirzadeh, Kabul.
On Thursday, Italy's outgoing government discussed an energy-saving plan during a council of ministers aimed to save up for this winter as part of efforts to reduce the country's dependency on Russian gas. Ecological Transition Minister Roberto Cingolani's plan includes limiting the use of heating in apartment blocks and public buildings. Italians will be demanded to turn down the central heating by 1 degree and turn it off for an hour at dusk every day starting in October, Italy is struggling with increased energy costs as wholesale gas prices have surged to historic levels across Europe since the start of the conflict in Ukraine.
Italy and a few other countries, including Belgium and the Czech Republic, are among those seeking an EU price cap on gas for power, but some members of the bloc, including France, are against this option. An emergency meeting of European Union energy ministers will be held in Brussels on September 9 to reach a consensus on tackling skyrocketing power costs.
We have a big gas problem. Our families and businesses are struggling, and politicians keep talking about making more debt to alleviate the crisis. But that would just be a patchwork. Italy must leave the TTF, the virtual trading point for natural gas based in the Netherlands, and then we can discuss a new LNG strategy.
Meanwhile, the Italian Confederation of Enterprises, Confcommercio, has warned some 120,000 Italian service sector firms could go out of business over the next 10 months.
I costi dell'energia sono ormai la vera emergenza.
The rise of energy costs is the real emergency. Service sector firms will spend a total of 33 billion euros on energy bills, three times as much as in 2021. The government must speed up the procedures to access the funds of the EU Energy Recovery Fund and to make sure that the price cap on gas for power is adopted.
If energy costs keep rising at the current pace, Confcommercio, which has estimated that 370,000 jobs are at risk, is calling on the government to extend tax relief and to mandate that bills can be paid in smaller installments. The bad news for Italy doesn't stop there. Inflation jumped to 9% in August from 8.4% the month before. Financial analysts expect inflation to grow further, reaching 10% in October. Max Civili, Rome.
CGT and think tank show that
the China Global Television Network and Chinese Public Opinion Institute have conducted a survey in Afghanistan and 24 global countries to assess the 20-year American war on Afghanistan.
Now, the Taliban will pay a price.
At the beginning of its presence in Afghanistan, the U.S. made a commitment to build a stable, strong, and prosperous Afghanistan, claiming it would establish democracy, fight against terrorism, and rebuild the nation. Nearly 79% of the Afghan respondents polled said the U.S. did not keep its promise, while 80% termed the U.S. war in their country a complete failure.
The U.S. never abided by its promises. Current disasters in Afghanistan have all resulted from the U.S. failures. We would witness better days today if the U.S. hadn't occupied our country. 20 years ago, the Taliban were ruling Afghanistan, and today they have control again. So what did the years of U.S. war and huge expenses change in our country? The U.S. claimed to bring prosperity in Afghanistan. Instead, it destroyed everything.
During the war, Afghanistan faced severe challenges with regards to security, economy, and people's livelihoods. Some 56.6% of Afghan respondents said the U.S. left the Afghan economy worse than it was in 2001. Yet 80% of global respondents believe that the causes of local terrorism still exist in the war-ravaged country.
I've been in Afghanistan through the U.S. invasion. I agree with the results of the poll. The U.S. came to our country claiming to counter terrorism and help the Afghan economy grow, but practically none of them materialized. The U.S. institutionalized fraud and abuse. As a result, today Afghans don't have food to eat and terrorism threats are rising.
Meanwhile, 68% of the respondents said the U.S. war in Afghanistan has caused the U.S. to continue to lose its credibility with the international community. Some 65% of those surveyed in Afghanistan said they believe neighboring countries, including Iran, Pakistan, and China, play a key role in the rebuilding of the war-battered nation. 70% of global respondents described Washington seizing Afghanistan's assets as pure looting. They called on the U.S. to return Afghans' money. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
On the 44th anniversary of the disappearance of Imam Musa Sadr, Lebanese Parliament Speaker Nabih Biri stressed that the kidnapping of the prominent Shiite cleric was a crime that is a sovereign Lebanese case.
The failure of the current Libyan authorities to cooperate with the Lebanese authorities is considered to be collusion. The Arab League must press the authorities to cooperate.
Commenting on the issue of the demarcation of the country's southern maritime border with the Israeli occupying regime, the House Speaker accused the U.S. envoy of buying time.
We will not concede our rights, nor will we concede our sovereignty, and we will defend our land, sea, and resources with all our might. The ball now is in the court of the U.S. The U.S. envoy Hochstein said that he will be absent for 2 weeks, but 1 month has passed, and we have not received an answer.
People from all over the country came to the southern town of Tyre to commemorate the man who was seen as a hope for the oppressed and a reason to stop internal strife.
I don't have much to say except that I'm touched by all this love for Imam Sadr. May God uncover his fate.
Imam Sadr resembles the light, the beam of light, that at a certain time, in the midst of darkness, came to Lebanon and led Lebanon and the Lebanese to a new life, life of accepting the other, of cherishing the other, life of victory.
You see, you can have tears when you see all these people are coming, just because that person is a very exceptional. He came as a blessing from the sky, I would consider, in the middle amongst of all when Lebanon was suffering and still suffering.
The only verified fact concerning Imam Sadr's case was that he arrived in the Libyan capital of Tripoli at the end of August 1978 with two companions, Sheikh Mohammed Yaqub and journalist Abbas Badreddin. Back then, the regime of Libyan dictator Muammar Gaddafi had claimed that the three men boarded a flight to Italy on August 31st. But al-Sadr and his companions were never seen again.
Many had hoped that the fall of former dictator Muammar Gaddafi would reveal the secrets about the disappearance of Sayyid Musa Sadr. But those secrets were buried with the Libyan dictator, which led to a dead-end investigation. Maryam Saleh from Tyre, South Lebanon.
The Iranian foreign minister's short-notice visit to Russia carries major messages, as it comes at a time when Tehran is carefully examining the recent U.S. draft response to the 2015 deal, which holds Russia as one of its signatories. Hossein Amir Abdullahian was warmly greeted in Moscow on Wednesday by his Russian counterpart, Sergei Lavrov. The Russian foreign minister once again reaffirmed his country's support for a fair deal or no deal.
The Russian Federation shares the same stances as Iran towards the 2015 deal. We believe that the U.S.'s illegal sanctions against Iran must be removed to save the deal.
Meanwhile, Tehran and Washington are currently exchanging comments on the European Union's new draft proposal for the revival of what is known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. Iran has repeatedly said it wants a sustainable accord, which includes guarantees that would make the deal immune to any possible withdrawal by the U.S. administration.
My colleagues are thoroughly reviewing the American text. We seek stronger and more reliable guarantees from the U.S. to prevent any future withdrawal from the deal by the U.S. government.
The 2015 deal was cast into limbo in 2018 when Washington unilaterally walked out of the accord and reinstated sanctions on Tehran. Iran, in return, scaled back some of its commitments to the pact, saying it will return to its obligations only after the U.S. removes all anti-Iran sanctions. The Vienna talks over the revival of the accord have faced a hiatus over the past 5 months. The discussions are now set to resume after Iran approves and accepts the U.S. draft response.
The Iranian foreign minister's visit to Moscow is of great significance, since Russia is a key player in the 2015 deal and shares Iran's stance in the accord. Now, while the United States' response to the EU draft proposal is still under examination in Tehran, here, Sergei Lavrov says Russia will accept nothing less than Tehran's full rights under the agreement. Yusuf Jalali, Moscow.
On the 30th of August last year, the last of the U.S. troops hastily left Kabul International Airport, marking the end of a two-decade occupation of Afghanistan. On its anniversary, the people of Afghanistan are celebrating this occasion. They say being independent and free from any occupation is a great blessing for the nation.
This is a victorious day for Afghans. 1 year ago, the U.S. occupying forces were forced to leave Afghanistan. Of course, they were defeated against the will of our people. We are proud that another invasion failed in our country.
Most Afghan people believe the U.S. invasion brought them nothing but more conflict, poverty, destruction, and suffering. They say today it is Afghans who are in charge of their own country and that they should work to build their homeland.
In the past 20 years, we didn't witness anything except bombardments, destruction, and civilian casualties. People across the country were busy burying their loved ones every day.
We have gathered here to mark Afghanistan's independence from the U.S. occupation. Last year, on this day, the U.S. withdrew from our country. We are happy that the U.S. is no more present here. But unfortunately, our country is reeling from economic problems. I hope the new rules of Afghanistan provide job opportunities and protect the rights of all Afghans.
Participants also called on the U.S. to learn from its past mistakes and stop the ongoing ill policies towards Afghanistan and its people. 1 year on, Afghans are celebrating the U.S. withdrawal from their country. People here say they are happy that the U.S. invasion was ended because they were exhausted by Americans' gross violations. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
England's healthcare service workers receiving national praise for staying in the job through the grueling days of the pandemic to save lives. An increasing number of them, doctors, nurses, and midwives, have either quit the service or are actively considering to do so.
Profits have risen by 35% in the UK since the pandemic. More money to the rich, but not to those that are sick or for people that care for them.
The most recent culprit, poor pay. Rejecting a 4% pay increase in the face of soaring inflation, they're set to vote for industrial action.
Even with all those budgeting, we are still struggling. And so what would help in the NHS really was to increase our salary like everybody else is getting bonuses. We are not. Why? Why is this? And if you're not going to increase our salary, at least do something about transportation or even the parking. We can't be paying for things like this. It's ridiculous.
There are other reasons, too, for the exodus. A recent survey by union-led With NHS Staff campaign found stress, burnout, a feeling of abandonment after the pandemic. Some are having to use food banks or sleep inside hospitals. And it doesn't stop there.
There were other abuses of staff which made themselves clear, which also manifested. And actually, a large part of the nursing workforce who want to learn also cite discrimination. And there's a large amount of bullying, harassment, intimidation, discrimination that goes hand in hand with not every environment within the NHS, but within certain environments.
More people leaving the NHS means more work to be done by those who stay while they wait for the tens of thousands of vacancies across the country to be filled. A negative spiral hard to overcome in addition to the cost of living crisis. And then there's the years of underfunding and a wholesale drive to privatization, regardless of which party is in power.
The plan to privatize the NHS is not piecemeal. It's wholesale. I'm afraid Labour and Tory are like this. There isn't a fundamental difference in their attitude. We're already facing a winter bed crisis now. It's August, okay? And it's only going to get worse through the winter. So there is an under-provision in order to force people who can't get adequate care from the NHS into the private sector.
Created after World War II by a Labour government, the NHS is a publicly funded healthcare system, free at the point of need. Decades later, though, it's facing acute staff shortages, underfunding, and rapid privatization, which means that the crown jewel of Britain's public healthcare provision may soon be no more. Saipur is up, London.
Pakistan is racing against time to prevent further loss of life and accelerate aid deliveries to those affected by relentless monsoon rains and devastating flooding, which have led to a staggering number of casualties and caused billions of dollars in damage. Fears of flooding around the riverbanks prompted thousands from north to south to flee their homes, with some living on highways with their livestock miles away from their flooded villages and towns. Many still are not ready to leave their houses underwater.
Our houses have been washed away with floods. With everything we had, we have nothing to lose now. We are living in miserable conditions and waiting for help from the government.
Millions of Pakistanis affected by the worst flooding in a decade are in desperate need of aid. Thousands are living in temporary shelters. As the authorities say, they have been overwhelmed by the scale of the disaster.
We evacuated people from low-lying areas. Almost around 50,000 people were evacuated within a span of 10 hours. The relief side is ongoing. The district administration is providing meals, medicines, lodging, and all other facilities.
Press TV's crew visited a flood-hit region on the bank of River Kabul in Nowshera district of one of the worst-hit provinces of Pakistan, Khyber Pakhtunkhwa. Powerful flash floods caused the Kabul River to swell, sweeping away bridges overnight, cutting off the local population from road access. However, rescue workers say that they have managed to save the lives of thousands of residents thanks to early evacuations.
We remain successful in preventing life losses as our rescue teams make it possible to evacuate people before the flood water hits the nearby population on the bank of River Kabul. Now we are trying to deliver food via boats to the people who are still stranded in flood water.
Relief camps have been established by the Pakistani government in various parts of the country for flood victims. However, many remote regions are still waiting for rescue teams.
The remains of the flood show the intensity of the disaster that broke the record of past 30 years. An estimate suggests that over 33 million people are affected by the tragedy. The future of those who are displaced are in limbo, as nobody knows how and where they will rebuild their lives. Nasir Kazmi, Nowshera district of northwestern Pakistan.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
The United States is the only large wealthy country in the world that doesn't have universal health care. The U.S. healthcare system ranks last among high-income countries. And the bad news comes when the media announces yet another drop in life expectancy in the United States for the second year in a row, which should be blamed mostly for the poor healthcare system in this country. In this regard, we have taken a look at the world media for further details on this issue. The title of the article is, "The U.S. Experiences Drop in life expectancy for second year in a row." Stay tuned, please. Truthout website recently wrote, life expectancy in the United States has dropped for the second year in a row, a decline that is largely due to the coronavirus pandemic and the country's inequitable healthcare system. Before the pandemic, the average life expectancy in the U.S. was 78 years and 10 months. In 2020, that number dropped to 77 years. And last year, it dropped to 76 years and 1 month. The last time the nation's life expectancy was this low was more than two decades ago, in 1996. The current drop is the largest two-year decline in the U.S. in almost 100 years of tracking the data. The life expectancy for members of marginalized communities has undergone a particularly precipitous drop. Over the past 2 years, the life expectancy for Native Americans and Alaska Natives dropped by around 6.6 years. It's a ridiculous decline. When I saw a 6.6-year decline over 2 years, my jaw dropped. I made my staff rerun the numbers to make sure, said Robert Anderson, chief of Mortality Statistics Branch of the National Center for Health Statistics. The life expectancy for Native Americans and Alaska Natives is now just 65 years, according to the new numbers. This figure is equivalent to the nation's life expectancy overall in 1940s. According to the Truthout, these numbers were released in a government report recently which cited the pandemic as the central reason for the decline. But experts say additional factors played a role as other wealthy nations have not seen the same drops, and some have begun to see their life expectancies recover from declines brought on by the pandemic. Stephen Wolf, Director Emeritus of Center on Society and Health at Virginia Commonwealth University, attributes the discrepancy to the fact that other countries have had more effective vaccination campaigns and populations that are more willing to social distance and wear masks. The U.S. healthcare system has also contributed to the decline, he said. While the U.S. is a world leader in terms of what kind of care it can provide, there are widespread socioeconomic disparities that make access to care more difficult, particularly for marginalized communities. Wolf said to the New York Times, "The United States is clearly an outlier. Notably, the U.S. is the only large wealthy country in the world without universal healthcare." And New York Times had this headline, U.S. life expectancy falls again in historic setback. It wrote, the decline during the pandemic is the sharpest in nearly 100 years, hitting Native American and Alaska Native communities particularly hard. The average life expectancy of Americans fell precipitously in 2020 and 2021, the sharpest two-year decline in nearly 100 years, and a stark reminder of the toll exacted on the nation by the continuing coronavirus pandemic. In 2021, the average American could expect to live until the age of 76, federal health researchers reported recently. The figure represents a loss of almost 3 years since 2019, when Americans could expect to live on average nearly 79 years. The reduction has been particularly steep among Native Americans and Alaska Natives, the National Center for Health Statistics reported. Average life expectancy in those groups was shortened by 4 years in 2020 alone. The cumulative decline since the pandemic started, more than 6.5 years on average, has brought life expectancy to 65, a among Native Americans and Alaska Natives, on par with the figure for all Americans in 1944. In 2021, the shortening of lifespan was more pronounced among white Americans than among black Americans, who saw greater reductions in the first year of the pandemic. According to New York Times, while the pandemic has driven most of the decline in life expectancy, a rise in accidental deaths and drug overdoses also contributed, as did deaths from heart disease, chronic liver disease, and diabetes. This is, until now, experts have been accustomed to measuring life expectancy changes in increments of months, not years. Even small declines in life expectancy of a tenth or two-tenths of a year mean that, on a population level, a lot more people are dying prematurely than they really should be, said Robert Anderson, chief of mortality statistics at the NCHS. But the coronavirus was not solely to blame. Long-standing health problems rooted in poverty, discrimination, and poor access to healthcare left Native Americans and Alaska Natives particularly vulnerable to the virus, said Dr. Ann Bullock, former director of diabetes treatment and prevention at the Federal Indian Health Service Agency and a member of the Minnesota Chippewa tribe. New York Times says one in seven Native Americans and Alaska Natives has diabetes, the highest rate among racial or ethnic groups in the United States of America, and many struggle with obesity or excess weight. Both conditions make people more susceptible to severe COVID-19, and crowded, multi-generational housing adds to the risk. Americans suffer from what experts have called the U.S. health disadvantage, an amalgam of influences that erode well-being, Dr. Wolf said. These include a fragmented, profit-driven healthcare system, poor diet, and a lack of physical activity, and pervasive risk factors such as smoking, widespread access to guns, poverty, and pollution. The problems are compounded for marginalized groups by racism and segregation, he added. The result is a high disease burden among Americans and shorter life expectancy compared with that in comparable high-income nations over the last two decades, Dr. Wolf said. Over a million Americans have died of COVID-19 and more died in 2021 than in 2020, despite the availability of vaccines. To date, only two-thirds of Americans are fully vaccinated and only one-third have had a booster shot.
Start. Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. Islam ID. Allah my Lord. His word Quran. Muhammad Prophet. Praise be upon.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Dear listeners, sisters and brothers, welcome to Youth Station. This is Arab English Radio Once more, I have the honor to be your host. And here with me, I have Bita, my dear friend. Assalamu alaikum, Bita.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I am Bita, and I'm really honored to be here to talk to you about our topic.
Of course, it's a pleasure to meet you here. What are you studying?
Actually, this year I passed the university entrance examination.
So wish you luck.
Yes, thank
you. How was it?
It was good. I could be accepted in my favorite university.
Which is?
Which is the University of Iran in Tehran. And I want to study medicine, actually.
So, that's very great.
Thank you very much. It was always my favorite major to study.
You must have been a very assiduous girl.
It was really difficult. It was a kind of long road to achieve this achievement, actually. But I'm really happy to stay here and to have the honor to cure people. And one day I will give life to other people.
Yeah.
It is physically.
That's the goal of all the students who study science.
Yeah.
That's their goal, to help people and find cures.
But it's not a cliche for me.
Of course. Yeah. Of course, people are different and they have different notions. So wish you luck with that.
Thank
and
you
I hope
very much.
You get the desired result that you're waiting for. Do you think as a youth you have any problem?
Yes, of course. You know, we are living in a society that has especially standards. Mm-hmm. You know, for meeting these standards, you have to do something. You have to face many obstacles. And you cannot just turn around these obstacles. You have to face them. You have to solve them. And there is nothing like, for example, to cut this long road. You have to go through it. You have to do anything you have in your power to achieve what you want. And in this road, I think it's natural to have some problems. First of all, I think one of my biggest problems is that I don't have stable feelings and emotions.
Oh, yeah, that's very common.
Yeah. For example, I cannot decide, I'm really certain and sure about this decision. No, I cannot tell that because I'm not sure about myself.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, I think, a natural problem for this age.
Welcome to the club. It's very natural to everyone, I guess.
Yeah,
so
exactly. For this generation and this age, it's a natural thing. But actually, it's a problem.
Yes, it needs to be solved because
exactly.
At a certain level, it's going to turn into a really, really disaster.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And also, it reminded me of a beautiful quote from Imam Ali alayhi salam that when, for example, when you have feeling for something, when you love something, your sight and your hearing will lose its power to see the reality. And you cannot tolerate any disagreement or anything against the object of devotion that you have.
Yeah, that's very true. So it's another problem, you know?
I know that, exactly. And so for finding friend or even in my routine communication, even I have problems. And
you an introvert?
Yes, I am.
Yes,
I don't
you
wanna,
are.
Yeah, yes, I am.
That's why you have problem with communicating.
Yeah, I'm not shy or something, but you know, I cannot express
at least
my
you
feelings
look shy.
The way I want to. I look.
Yes.
Thank you. But the thing is, you know, I cannot express my feelings with words. It's really hard to find the best word.
Yeah, usually words are not enough to convey the meanings.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And always there is a gap between what you really want to say and what you say.
So up until now, let me just make it clear that we are talking about the problems of the modern youth.
Yeah.
One of the problems that you counted was?
About the problems that you have with your feelings and emotions, expressing them.
Yes, expressing feelings and emotions and also indecisiveness.
Yeah.
You cannot say whether your decision is right or wrong.
Exactly.
And you cannot make sure if it is your last decision.
Exactly.
And we said that sometimes is very much common and natural because I do feel that way as well. Dear listeners, this is IRB English Radio. Don't leave us, please. Just go for a little break and I'll be back in no time.
This is IRIB English Radio. You are listening to Youth Station.
There are too much more of these sort of problems.
Yeah.
If I count another one, I would say laziness is another problem. Because youth is actually the spring of your life. When you are not giving it enough value, when you are not making the most of it, then there would come a time that you would regret it.
Exactly.
They would say that, oh my God, time has passed and I have done nothing. Though I could have been something really, really different. You might have been, I don't know, a doctor. You might have been a physician, anything.
Anything.
You might have been a help to humanity, but you have wasted all your lifetime using your cell phone doing nothing.
Exactly. I wanted to tell the same thing somehow.
Yeah.
You know, I think the main problem is because of our society or our culture, I don't know what is the reason, but for example, when the kids are kids, they want to grow up too fast. They want to involve themselves in some economic matters, some financial matters that these matters are not related to
them. They
have
big dreams.
Exactly. But for example, when they have a kind of family that will protect them, will somehow support them in this wrong way, they will become an adult in young ages. That is a big disaster because when they become older, when they become youth, when they become teenagers, they feel like there is something empty in their lives.
You mean that they have a materialistic point of view?
Exactly. And for just filling this emptiness in their souls, they would do anything. They'll waste their time in relations that...
And even they might go to some extremes that would cross the borders.
Exactly. And they want to do anything to feel this, no matter what it is, no matter how wrong it is, and no matter what effect it has.
At whatever cost.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, you cannot find the person who is worth to blame here, because all the people have some faults here for this future that is going to be a disaster. Because, for example, when you come for 40 years old and you see you're nothing, you achieve nothing in your life.
Well, you know, there's another thing as well. Bita, something has happened to modern youth since we're talking to youth.
Yes.
I would say, again, I would blame internet because it has brought too much of goodness to our life. It has brought speed. It has brought some sort of satisfaction even because nowadays everything has become much
even
more
perfectionism.
Easier. Yeah. But that perfectionism is the thing that I have problem with.
Exactly.
So it is one of the biggest problems ever. But just as I was saying, internet has brought some really, really big problems. One of them is the thing that you mentioned, creating some people who are searching for perfectionism, which will never exist. It is something that will never be achieved.
I do agree with that point, unfortunately, because there are many celebrities.
There
are many people who show an unrealistic picture from life you're unable to achieve that standard of life.
That's
and
very true.
You see that, you become depressed. Oh my God, why not me?
Yeah.
Why I'm not like that? Why I cannot wear that clothes, for example? Why I cannot have that car? Why? You know, and you face
some
needs.
Shall we call that hypocrisy?
Maybe. Yeah.
You know, because media has made it easy for everyone to make a perfect picture of themselves, which is exactly the reverse of what they truly are.
Exactly.
I am showing how kind, how modest, how humble I am.
How beautiful you are.
Yes, how beautiful I look. My skin does not have a spot on it. Everything is just perfect and peachy. But when I when people come to dig deeper and they come to pass the surface and they get into my soul, then they would see it's empty.
Exactly.
It's a barren field.
I think the point is we are making a big gap between what we really are in this world and what we're going to be, our ideal self, you know?
Yeah.
And the more the gap is, the biggest disaster will be in the future because you will find yourself in a situation, in a place, and in a relation that you cannot be yourself. You make a picture of yourself which is not yourself.
Yeah.
And that is a big catastrophe, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Because after a while, you will lose your true self.
You would have a double character, you know?
Exactly.
Which is a horrible thing for a human being because when I am one person, dealing with my problems and dilemmas is going to be difficult, much less thinking about another character that I'm creating out of myself. It's going to be horrible.
Exactly. You know, the thing is, you will lose yourself. You will forget your true self. And after a while, you will get tired from what you're not. And for finding the true self that you lose, you have to waste a big amount of time again.
Yeah.
And this is a disaster.
So but now, what do you say about a break?
Exactly. I do agree with you.
So, dear listeners, I hope you're not tired. Let's go for a short break. We'll be back in no time. Thank you for listening. Stay tuned. We're coming back. Welcome back. You're listening to Youth Station. We are talking about the common problems of the youth of modern age. So we talked about plenty of those problems: indecisiveness, getting to live a double life since there's media, and we have to deal with too much of perfectionism that is an absolute lie. You're listening to Asma, and here with me I have Beta.
The thing I want to talk about right now is there are many problems. If we want to count them, get old to count them.
We would need an eternity to count them.
Exactly. And I think we have to talk about the solution to these problems more than anything. And in my opinion, one of the most important solutions for all of these problems in youth generation is goal. You have to choose a goal.
Yeah, you have to find a goal.
Exactly. And to follow
which is very difficult, by the way.
I know. It is difficult. And also, there are many factors in environment and the place you live and anything in your communication that will affect your goal, yeah. The way you want to choose it, the way you want to decide it. And no matter what you choose, always there are some difficulties, there are some obstacles, and you have to face them. And before you choose a goal, before you decide to do something, you have to empower yourself for these difficulties.
Yeah. And aside from that goal that you mentioned, I would like to ask you a question. What do you think about religion? Does it have any impact on solving these problems?
Exactly. Religion, I think, is a special bond with your spirituality in this world. And when you become nearer to God or you have a better communication with anything in this religion, no matter what you believe, when you believe it truly, it gives you a way. For example, you decide to do something. You have to consider some factors in this way. You shouldn't do something like, I don't know, lying. Like, one of the things which is really important in a religion is God worry and taqwa. When you are God worry.
And if you want to define taqwa, what would you call it?
It means the fear of God.
Yeah.
Not only the fear which is mixed with love.
That gives you restraint.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean that taqwa will restrict your actions.
Self-control. It's a self-control.
It's a self-control in a good way. Because, because the love is next to taqwa always.
That is very important. So we were talking about the problems of the youth. And we said that there are a numerous amount of problems. If you want to count them, then we would need an eternity. I would write some volumes of book for that. But the thing that is going to solve it is actually the bond that we have with God. The spirituality that we experience with God is the best way to find solutions for our problems. So I know it is very difficult and it is easier said than done, but trust me, when you enrich your connection with Allah, everything is going to be easier. So thank you, dear listeners. This was all the time that we had for today's episode. Until another session, I bid you farewell. May Allah bless and protect you. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Radio Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.